discuss what we stop, where we start from, where we stopped yesterday, talk about how to reconstruct a bulk operator, and again, I'm going to focus on how to reconstruct a scalar field at some point in ADS in terms of a CFT operator, a non-local CFT operator, and how to do it in various different kinds of ways, and what that has to do with quantum information. And the second part of the talk, I will talk about how to derive, it's in a parallel kind of direction. It's how to derive Einstein equations in the bulk, so dynamical, classical dynamical equations from using entanglement. And I'll be more specific about what I mean in a moment. And I want to perhaps emphasize what I kind of implied yesterday, but didn't quite say explicitly. Both of these two approaches in building bulk dynamics from the CFT is still very much, is certainly not the end of the story. It's both in this direction, general direction of seeing how space-time time emerge from the non-gravitational system. But in principle, the goal of doing that is try to build a semi-classical space-time just from the CFT data. Suppose I give you some data of that fully specify the CFT, maybe a complete set of operator product coefficients, coefficients for three-point functions in the CFT, then one should be able to directly build all the bulk operators and check that they satisfy all the equations of motion. For the scalar field, we may have Klein-Gordon equation. For the metric, we will have the Einstein equation, and so on. And that would be the most complete understanding of how to go from the CFT to ADS. And we are not there yet. And both of these are, I'm trying to tell you what our current best understanding of these issues are. But to start, let me first review what we discussed yesterday, just the part of the discussion that has that is most related to what we're going to do today. We know that there is an extrapolate dictionary that relates two operators. One is a local operator in the CFT, and the other is the limit of a bulk operator in ADS. And we have seen that yesterday. This is an operator equation. We can use it as a way of determining phi from O. The way to do that is to observe that phi satisfies some equation of motion. And at the order that we're discussing, it is just a free Klein-Gordon equation. And this is also an operator equation. We're solving the operator equation for phi with the boundary value problem, with a boundary value condition that is set by the operator O. So I wrote down yesterday a solution that involves a Green's function, or generally in this context called a smearing function. But I didn't really give you what a smearing function is, so that's what I'm going to do today. So yesterday, you might remember this formula that should give a solution to this problem, but the problem is then to find what is the right k. There is a general strategy of how to of finding this smearing function, and remember that this is not a standard boundary value problem. And in the sense that we are not even mathematically guaranteed existence and uniqueness, but we can, as a practical matter, we want to just proceed and find, see if we can find some solution to the problem. And in some situations, in this case, it's good to have a strategy of how to do that. So the strategy is to use mode sums. The idea is the following. In a bulk, we have a scalar field that satisfies some free equation of motion. In all these situations, we can expand phi in terms of some set of modes in ADS. So the idea is we have ADS, and then we have some set of modes that is labeled by a label K. You can think of it as the analog of the momentum in flat space. And phi can generally be written as a sum or integral over some coefficient times fk plus complex conjugate. We're assuming here we're dealing with a real scalar field. And this coefficient, so the mode function is just a C number. The coefficient then has to be an operator. And this operator is the annihilation operator. It annihilates the vacuum. And in a complex conjugate, we have the creation operator. So this is very analogous to what we do just for free quantum field theory in flat space, except that the mode functions are now more complicated. The mode function has to satisfy the equation of motion. Therefore, one can show that it should have some boundary behavior as z goes to 0. It should have the same boundary behavior as the operator phi. And remember that in order for this limit to exist, phi has to behave like z to the delta. Each mode function will also behave like that, with some general function of x, x being a collection of coordinates on a boundary. So perhaps it's easy to think of the boundary coordinate as x, and z is the bulk coordinate.
So this one recondition, so this is, you're saying that we're fixing the depth.
Yes.
But the source part of the mode is left free, right?
In this case, we want to solve the equation where the leading behavior is z to the delta. We'll see that in a moment. I'll give a set of mode solutions for global ADS. So it's important to remember that this problem is phrased intrinsically as a Lorentzian problem, not a Euclidean problem. We're solving this in real-time ADS. So once we have that, so the idea is we solve the Klein-Gordon equation, find the big F, and then we can extract the little f. Now we can take the limit, take the phi to the boundary, and find out what O of x is. So it's easy. O of x is simply the boundary limit of that, which we know from the second line. So it will be easy, just dk ak times little fk of x plus complex conjugate. Now the idea is we want to invert this integral. Instead of having O expressed as some integrals of A, we want to express A as an integral of O. In order to do that, we need that the mode function on the boundary, little fk, at least have to be linearly independent. So the important thing is that they have to be linearly independent, and often if they're linearly independent, they can then be made orthogonal to each other. So let's proceed by assuming such relations hold. And what we write is then, if we take two mode functions with different k, then generally speaking, it is 0 unless the two k's are the same. And we're allowing there's some normalization factor here. So let me define a normalization factor as 1 over nk. Once we have this relation, then we can just extract ak by taking an integral of O with some mode function. That's also easy. Was there a question?
Yeah. Do you generally need a measure and that orthogonality?
Yeah, here we're assuming, in fact, I haven't even specified what kind of integrals here we're doing with respect to k. Yes, it will come with a measure. And for example, in certain cases, I write an integral here, it may be a discrete sum. So I'm just being very general about what kind of mode functions we have here. So appropriate set of mode functions will come with its measure. But with that set of measure, I can invert this, and now the task becomes really simple. I have the bulk operator expressed as in terms of A, and I have A expressed in terms of O. So surely I can write phi in terms of O, and it will simply be so simply plugging this equation to the previous one. This is just rewriting this equation with what we know about AK. Now let's be a physicist and exchange the two integration and not worry about any subtleties. We will get to do the k integral first. So we do the k integral first, and then we do the x prime integral.
Did you want dx on that top line?
Dx on the top
line. The integrals over dx.
Here?
Yeah. So
dx. Oh, yes. Thank you. You're right. Thanks. Yes, question?
What are the typical labels of k?
I will show some examples later on. Depends on this. This is a question that depends on what mode functions we want to choose, in what region they have support on. For ADS, there will be a set of discrete labels, like angular momentum and so on, that describes the modes. For the Ringler wedge that was talking about, ADS Ringler wedge, we will have a more continuous version of the labels because the eigenvalues of the hyperbolic space is continuous. So, but I mentioned that maybe in 10 minutes. So this is just a formal procedure to get the mode function, to get the smearing function. Now we just observe that this is kxz x prime. So we have solved the problem. Now we can do, actually let me do this. So now let's do some examples. Let's take global ADS first. For concreteness, let's consider one point. I'm going to specify to the center of ADS in a moment, but let's first try to see how complicated this mode expansion would be in global ADS. in order to do that, I need to choose a coordinate. So global ADS has, I've been using X and Z so far, but you should take that with a grain of salt in the sense that usually they mean the Poincaré coordinates, but everything I've said so far can be upgraded to a statement in other coordinates. In global ADS, it's easiest now if I choose the following coordinates that has a metric like this. This is a metric for D plus one dimensional ADS with a radius of curvature R. Rho is in the range from 0 to pi over 2, where 0 is the center, and pi over 2 is the boundary of ADS. So the CFT lives on the cylinder, which corresponds to rho equals pi over 2. It's easy to tell that because that's where the coefficient in front of the metric blows up. At rho equals 0, the sphere shrinks to 0 size, so that's the center. You should think of different values of rho as concentric circles going in until they meet at the center. Now, this is a particularly nice coordinate for writing down a scalar field in terms of modes. So there is some expression that involves doing a discrete sum. So in this case, my label k corresponds to a set of discrete parameters, n, l, and m. And I'll define what l and m are. They are labels for spherical harmonics in the appropriate dimension. So I'm being very explicit just to show you that this is something we can do, at least in simple, highly symmetric examples like pure ADS, and to demonstrate that even though there is no mathematical guarantee that this has a solution, we can nonetheless solve them in various cases. So this is just what this equation, this mode sum, looks like in pure ADS. In global coordinates, P is some Jacobi function, Jacobi polynomial, which you can look up on Wikipedia. And A is the annihilation operator. L and M corresponds to a set of quantum numbers for the spherical harmonics in D minus one dimensions. So a sanity check. Now, the mode function needs to satisfy asymptotics that says at the boundary it behaves like z to the delta. The easiest way to check that is we should think of in this coordinate z is like cosine rho. Remember that in the z coordinate, z goes to 0 is the boundary. Here, the same is true for cosine rho. So this is, and there's a typo here. This is delta. So now it works. This is z to the delta. So each of the mode functions goes like z to the delta at the boundary. Now, ideally, we would like to extract the boundary behavior of this, define the little f, which are the boundary modes, and then perform this integral over, in this case, a sum over NLM to find the smearing function. That's going to be complicated. Turns out one can do the sum, and it turns out to have a simple result. So we're going to look at an operator, a bulk operator, at the center at rho equals 0. And I'm going to further assume that t is 0. So an operator at some t equals 0 slice at the center of ADS. the idea is that one can do this sum. And because of spherical symmetry, the mode function can only depend on T prime in this example. Sorry, the Smearing function can only dependent on T prime. So there is some formula one can write down fairly explicit. It involves the volume of the sphere, which again are more gamma functions. And the important thing is the dependence on T, or T prime in this case, is simply a cosine, a power of the cosine. And also, it is only non-zero when the point on the boundary is space-like with respect to the bulk point. That's one of the features of the Smearing function I mentioned yesterday. The Smearing function for global ADS, can be chosen to have support only on those two bands. So let me draw that in a different color. So K, in this case, can be chosen to have support only within this this region, which consists of all points space-like separated from the origin, the bulk center point. I won't repeat how to do this. And by the way, this is true for even-dimensional ADS. There's another formula for odd-dimensional ADS, which I won't repeat. It's just analogous to this. Just as a sanity check, the formula has to make sense and be real for reasonable values of the parameter. So that means cosine T prime should, in principle, be non-negative. Otherwise, I could get in trouble by taking a general power of a negative number. So one can show that this region is precisely so in this band. So when you approach these two two directions where you have points light-like separated with respect to center, cosine T prime becomes zero. So this is just a quick check of the formula, and it works. Yesterday, yes.
So yesterday you said that this K is not unique, but here is not. We don't have any free parameters. So
yes. So this is a very good question, and I'm just coming to that. In this mode expansion, so remember that in the general strategy I said earlier, there's a condition that we need to check in this strategy, which is the little fk has to be orthogonal with each other. They cannot be linearly dependent. But I haven't said anything about they form a complete set, right? I haven't said that. In fact, in this case, they don't form a complete set. Why? On the boundary, we have behaviors. If we look at the behavior as a function of t, we always get behaviors, frequencies, which are 2n plus l plus delta. So they are always an integer, a non-negative integer plus delta. So therefore, it's missing all those modes, which can be written as delta minus a positive integer with this frequency. So in principle, what this means is that I can, because phi is missing these modes, that means if I take an arbitrary set sums of modes that this phi doesn't have, and in particular, if I take the boundary limit, that also means that O of x doesn't have, and if I integrate it against O of x, this is going to be zero. Simply just because O, being a boundary limit of this expression, does not have those modes. If we take if we take, there's an integral here. So we're picking out the zero coefficient if we do this. That means K can, in principle, be shifted by any combination of these modes. And K is positive here. So this is the freedom I was talking about yesterday, very briefly. And this is the fact that fk, little fk, doesn't necessarily form a complete set gives us a freedom in choosing what k we want. And here I'm making a particular choice of what kind of modes of this type I included in k to achieve the fact that the support of k is consists of all the points that are space-like with respect to this bulk operator. Yes?
What's the physics of these modes?
What is the physics of these modes? In this case, it's a question which I like to come back to in a moment. But right now, let me just say that this is a redundancy in how we write a bulk operator in terms of a boundary operator. It doesn't. Doing this on K does not shift what we mean by a bulk operator in any sense, because they simply integrate to zero with respect to O. We will see a different kind of redundancy in a moment, which has to do with ADS Ringler reconstruction. Any other questions? Yes?
So why don't you have the non-normalizable module? Like, why is there only Z to the delta?
Yeah, in this particular case, I'm considering the following problem. Instead of considering a deformation of the theory, I'm considering the theory with zero source. So I'm already, so there's a different question, set of questions we could ask, which is we deform the theory by adding sources to the CFT, correspond to this O, and then we look at what a theory behaves like. And usually that's the kind of questions we ask when we compute Witten diagrams. There we're adding something which is non-normalizable at a boundary, and that's the correct thing to do. Here, I'm focusing on the CFT with no deformation at all, but I'm asking how to, in this theory, so adding a deformation is a change of the theory. And right now, I'm not changing the theory, I'm focusing on the CFT with zero source. And I want to ask, how do I represent operators in the bulk from operators in the CFT? Because I'm not adding any source to the theory, the behavior, as an operator statement, the behavior is a normalizable one.
So this extrapolate dictionary is the limit with source set to zero?
Yes. Yes, that's right. Any other?
Is it obvious from that picture that the mean function?
Z to, you mean Z to the delta? Yes, are you asking whether this smearing function has the required properties so that when I take the bulk point to the boundary, it will have Z to the delta behavior? So in order to do that, we can show that. In order to do that, we first need to so this is only for the operator at a particular point at the center of ADS. We first had to move away from rho equals zero, but we can easily do that by performing an ADS isometry. The ADS isometry relates any points in ADS to the center point. After doing that, we can now check the behavior at the asymptotic boundary. And I won't be able to get into all those details, but it works.
How does that feature
modify? Yes. It's preserved the space-like behavior. Let me just draw a picture here. So suppose I look at the boundary point, and I will try my best to draw a reasonable picture. So you can also figure out all the points space-like separated with that bulk point. And it will be some skewed version of a bend. And that's the support. So the support is the region between these two skewed circles. The way to think about it is you can perform an isometry on ADS, and the isometry maps the center to that point, and also the two horizontal disks to these two disks. Yeah, this can be worked out. Let me, yes.
More general question. Is there a reason that this, can you pinpoint kind of the reason why this couldn't work in any, why couldn't I extrapolate dictionary for any bulk boundary theory? Because I can always set some boundary conditions and then solve the equation solution.
Are you asking to do it generally for, let's say, an arbitrary CFT? Or are you focusing on the...
Any field theory, well, I guess, and take any field theory and take any bulk theory and could, I guess, write an extrapolated dictionary, at least in this way, by fixing stuff at the by fixing the fields on the boundary and then solving for the equations of motion in this way, right?
As long as you have a local bulk theory, yes, you can then do this.
So there's nothing about it. So I could get an extrapolated dictionary for any.
Do you want to change from ADS to some other space time?
For example, yeah. I guess I'm interested in what is the kind of key element of ADS that fits, or if any, that fits in your, or whether this is just a generic thing that I can do for any, I could find an extrapolation between any bulk theory and any boundary theory.
So the requirement here, at least in this framework, we can certainly do deformation, but of the state, not necessarily of the theory, by moving away from pure ADS and consider asymptotically ADS. We can further deform the theory by putting the CFT on a different background. So the metric can be a different metric from the metric of a cylinder, and we then solve the system. It will be some other geometry. But all of these still comes from putting a CFT on some background metric. Now one can ask, can we do even further and consider something which is not putting a CFT on some manifold, but of a more general type. We have limited examples. We have certain examples like the Klebanov-Stressler example, which is one of the most concrete examples that goes beyond in this step, goes beyond the CFT. But most of the examples are in a category of having a CFT. So it's an interesting question. We don't know the full power of when we can, once we go beyond ADS CFT, is a guesswork of what we can do and what we cannot. And you can already see that in pure ADS is already quite a bit of work to get a smearing function. In more general examples, we have to solve a PDE with unnatural boundary conditions and non-standard boundary conditions. It's not always clear how to solve them, even numerically.
I guess that's a question of solving for the smearing function. But in principle, is there going to exist a smearing function which should allow me to give an extrapolated dictionary?
Because mathematically, we're not guaranteed a solution. So as physicists, again, we are used to believe that there exist solutions and therefore smearing functions. But it's best not to base things on that. And I'm actually going to say something which will definitely not rely on that. That has to do with the entanglement wedge. So let me first do the ADS Ringler example that I mentioned yesterday. It has to do with a version of the smearing function, but with a more restricted support. You may wonder, yes?
So like this, this smearing function seems pretty complicated. So is there anything to
we solved the equation. This seems to be the most compact way of writing down the solution. I don't know whether there is a better way to write it than what I've done now. I don't know. I don't know why it's this complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like if you think about it intuitively, like what do you think this smearing function should be, and does it match it?
I think the expectation we have is really coming from this procedure of solving differential equation with this boundary condition. And we don't have a priori what at our expectation for a smearing function. In fact, before this was realized, I guess even it's not clear whether the operator will have as simple a form as this at all. This is already quite surprising that one can write the operator as an integral of this function that can be written on, down on one line. So I guess we have, it's not, if we don't think about the bulk dynamics and just ask what a general operator in the CFT looks like, it will be horrendously complicated. So this is, I treat this as a simplification in some sense. And actually, in this example, in the ADS Ringler example, it will be more complicated. In this example, what we want to focus on is a wedge called ADS Ringler wedge. And I need different color. So the idea is we look at a constant time slice, and we look at a subregion at which we can conveniently take to be half of the space of the CFT, half of the circle on which the CFT lives, so the red part. Then we're going to look at these two 45-degree planes. And the idea is there is a nice region, very analogous to the Ringler region in flat space, that is carved out by this plane, by these two planes. So roughly speaking, I want to say it's this region. Hopefully, the picture is not too cluttered. And the statement is, now we have a region A on the boundary. Let me define what was left to be said yesterday, which is the domain of dependence. This is the domain of dependence, the boundary domain of dependence of A, which is defined to be it's defined to be all points such that all causal curves passing this point must intersect the region A. So this sounds abstract, so let me just draw a picture. I want to focus on the boundary, so I'm going to wrap around the picture on the boundary, and this is my region A. The domain of dependence looks like a diamond here. And the reason is, anywhere in the diamond, if we draw a causal curve is simply a curve that is either space-like, oh, sorry, time-like, or light-like, or null. So any curve which is a causal curve must pass through some point on A, whereas if I start outside, I can avoid passing through A. That's the definition of domain of dependence. Now, the ADS Ringler wedge statement is saying that there exists a smearing function for any bulk point in the ADS Ringler wedge of the region I've chosen. It's always a spherical region if I want to have an ADS Ringler wedge. As long as the bulk point is inside this wedge, there exists a smearing function whose support, so the support of K is equal to the domain of dependence of A. What this means is that I only need to know the operator. I can express this bulk operator in terms of CFT operators that only care about this domain of dependence of A. It doesn't care about anywhere outside. The usefulness of this is that, remember, this is trying to reconstruct a bulk operator in terms of CFT operators. We might be interested in situations that involves, for example, some observer having only access to a part of the CFT and doesn't know the entire CFT state. In those situations, they can perform measurement on A or on the causal development. On the causal domain of dependence of A, because they have access to this part of the system, but they don't necessarily have access to any part outside the system. In these situations, it's very useful to have a smearing function which only involves those points. And this is why this is more interesting in some sense than the global ADS reconstruction. I won't be able to write down what K is. It will involve a mode sum as complicated or even more complicated than the global ADS case, but similar formulas exist. There is a small subtlety that in this particular case, the smearing function is not really a function. It's a distribution. It's a feature of the mode sum that the sum does not actually converge. In this case, it's the integral. That integral over k over there that defines the smearing function doesn't actually converge at infinity. But if you think of it as a distribution, as we should think of operators in a general theory, as they are all distributions to be integrated against in an expectation value. So in that sense, this distribution helps us figure out what the bulk operator is in terms of some CFT operator. Yes?
So could you remind me, like, what is the difference between those two k's, that such a k, like smearing function, has different support?
What's different from them? Are you asking what is the difference between
yes.
these two?
Yes.
They're just very, very different functions and very different support.
Sorry, I mean, like, what? I mean, in the situation, like, I mean, what is the ADS mingler compared to?
The mode functions are different. The mode functions, we use a different set of mode functions. Maybe let me say a little bit how we find those mode functions. So here, we find the mode functions by expanding phi in terms of modes that live everywhere in ADS. Here, we don't do that. Here, we restrict to this wedge and find any operator inside this wedge as a set of mode functions that is only defined on the wedge.
So this line was baseline is the same, you just you chose different way to find the mode function?
Yes, and different set of mode functions.
Then, is it like kind of arbitrary, like you can like reconstruct this, but like at any, region on the boundary?
It's certainly non-unique, which is actually going to be my next point. So what's the implication of, now we've seen that there is an AVS Ringler reconstruction, now we can ask, if we can do this, we can do many things. So for example, let me take an example and for that, let me erase. I'm going to draw a picture that shows clearly what happens at a constant time slice. And it's easier to draw such a picture. So take a t equals 0 slice of the ADS picture over there, and this is the bulk point. Now, of course, there are different ways of reconstructing this operator now, because let's first discuss the situation where the point is a little off center, so I can draw pictures which are more similar to the ADS Ringler picture there. So I can certainly find the ADS Ringler wedge, which looks like this on t equals 0 slice. So phi will have a representation on some region A here. Let's call it phi A. We can also choose a different region. Let's choose that region. And suppose this red part is B. We also will have a phi B. And we can find an infinitely many possible realizations of the same operator. So this sounds very confusing. And it is very confusing because of several things. First, if you really think of, and all these confusions comes from thinking of the ADS Ringler wedge reconstruction as an operator equation. So if you think about the bulk operator as strictly the same in all these representations, so there are CFT operators are all the same, there's going to be a problem. The first problem is what I call the commutator problem. It says the following. Let's take this operator for now and look at its commutator with any arbitrary local operator in the CFT at some location. X can be arbitrary. I'll move this operator around to any location in the CFT. And I want to ask, what is the commutator between these two? Well, if I choose a local operator here, I will simply use the ADS Ringler reconstruction. Some region that does not include this point, I should always be able to find the ADS Ringler wedge that does that. It's very easy to draw pictures to show that. And once that's done, an operator that has support in this region will certainly commute with an operator which is separated from the entire region, which means that phi has to commute with operator O according to that particular realization. So it's 0. And I can do this no matter where x is. If I move x to here, I'll simply draw another ADS Ringler wedge to convince myself that the commutator is still 0. So the statement seems to be that this commutator is 0 no matter where x is. And that would be really strange, because it means that there exists some operator in the CFT that commutes with all local operators in the CFT, no matter what kind of operator. O can be an arbitrary kind of operator, can be single trace, double trace, it doesn't really matter. And in fact, there is a theorem in axiomatic quantum field theory that says the only that from which we can derive a statement that says the only operator that actually commutes with all local operators has to be the identity. That's the unique operator that has this property. But of course, operator, bulk operator at some point cannot be the identity. So this is a confusion. There's a second confusion, which is easier to draw, if I have an operator at the center and I divide the boundary into 3/3. And here I'm drawing 3 ADS Ringler wedges, but each of the Ringler wedges will span 2/3 of the boundary region. So the idea is this is A, this is B, this is C. Phi at the center will have a realization on AB because it's in the Ringler wedge of AB. It will also have a realization in BC. And the same is true for AC. This is just an natural conclusion from what we have seen from the general ADS Ringler reconstruction. But now, the mutual intersection between these three regions is the empty set. So what do we mean by an operator that lives, that can be represented by either AB or BC or AC? That is impossible to have a CFT operator to simultaneously satisfy these three representations. So the resolution of this, both puzzles, is to think of all of this as a quantum error correcting code. And because of the constraint on time, I will just mention that how to resolve the second thing from the quantum error correcting picture. The idea is that these are not the same operators, but they are same operators only if we focus on the restricted subspace of the Hilbert space. This is analogous to the code subspace in a quantum error correcting code. The code subspace should be thought of in this example as being encoding messages, different states for the bulk operator phi at the center. There is something we can measure and get out about the state at the center of ADS by measuring any one of the three operators. So that's why we associate phi to these three operators at the same time. It's the redundancy that is the smoking gun for how entanglement helps us to encode a message in a CFT, in this case, generally speaking, in a larger Hilbert space. So CFT in this case is the code. The bulk operator here is a physical operation on the encoded message. I'm going to say in the remaining 7 minutes or so, I'm going to say something about how to derive Einstein equations. But before I go on, is there any questions? Yes.
So in terms of one, you said about two, but resolution of one is just that it's the identity on the code subspace?
The resolution one is that we should think of this as expectation value. And we're only whenever we're taking expectation values inside the code subspace, it's zero, but it's generally not zero. And therefore, the commutator is not really zero on the entire Hilbert space, and therefore phi can be a non-trivial operator. Yes?
Is there a strong statement like any operator in the bulk will have a representation in terms of some Schnirian function of the operators in the boundary? In other words, is the Hilbert space is expected to be the same?
The Hilbert space for?
For the boundary CFT and the bulk theory.
We can certainly consider different theories. Different examples of ADS CFT that have different bulk fields and so on.
That's right, but in a particular
key, yes.
Or supergravity state.
Yes.
Is the Hilbert space the same, but meaning every single operator, local operator in the bulk will have a representation or many representations, at least one representation in terms of the boundary operator?
As long as the CFT is holographic, yes. You are asking whether any operator in the bulk will have some representation in the CFT,
yeah,
according to this any of these procedures.
Is that a conjecture, or like following, like is that ADS CFT, or is that that follows from Cauchy's time evolution?
It follows from ADS CFT. Yeah. It follows from the ADS CFT conjecture that says I can take the CFT path integral and rewrite it in terms of a gravitational path integral, at least in the semi-classical approximation. Yes?
So how do you define Wien Lovell? It seems like you can just like arbitrarily, I mean, put this portion.
Oh, this is a geodesic or minimal surface.
Geodesic.
Yes.
So then you can like cut your, like, I mean, for example, you shrink this 2 points and then have a very small like portion. Like, is it like as long as you can circle this point with a geodesic, then it is fine to...
As long as you find let's use the language of 2+1 dimensions. So in that case, if you find a geodesic and find the region that this geodesic corresponds to, you choose left or right. So as long as let's call this region A. And as long as the operator in the bulk is on the same side of the geodesic as A, then you have a realization on A. Yes?
You made some statement about entire dimensions disporting for spheres.
For spheres, that's right.
Is it normal happening in just other shapes?
Yes. This is the thing which I don't have time to go too detailed about. But you may remember that in the lecture that Mukun gave this morning, there is a privileged surface corresponding to any bulk boundary region, which is a minimal surface for static case and an extremal surface for general time dependent case. So for spherical regions, this is why I was talking of using the language of geodesics. In general, in higher dimensions, what we need to do is for a general boundary region, we will find the right Ryutaka-Nagi surface, the either minimal or extremal surface, and we can define a similar wedge, which is an appropriate generalization of the ADS Ringler wedge, and it's called the entanglement wedge. So just as ADS Ringler wedge is bounded by this surface, which is also a geodesic or minimal surface, in general, we simply do the same thing and define an entanglement wedge. And the same statement is true. Anything that is within the entanglement wedge of some region can be represented on that region.
So can you say why, going back to the question before, can you say why it's just the expectation value is zero? Because even for in the code subspace, I would expect that it should commutator should vanish identically, not just on average.
I'm saying that it is zero for any state so if I put it into an expectation value, it doesn't have to be the vacuum. It's any state in the code subspace. So this operator projected to the code subspace is the identity is the zero operator. Yes.
It looks like the CFT have a lot of redundant degree of freedom to describe the bulk. Can we understand it in terms of like Bayes' perspective?
I think the right way to understand it in terms of the quantum error correcting language, not in terms of a gauge. Well, gauge symmetries are also redundant, is also a redundancy. But in all of these discussions, we are already focusing on gauge invariant states, as we should. So we are already getting rid of that redundancy. But still, that's not enough to resolve this issue. Or maybe this is a good time to mention the difference between the previous discussion of K being we have some freedom in choosing our smearing function in a global ADS case, and the different realizations in terms of ADS Ringler wedge. There's a crucial difference here. Here, when we do this arbitrary shift of K by using these modes, we're not really changing. We're not changing our realization of the bulk operator in the CFT because we have phi equals the integral of KO. And this shift doesn't change the right-hand side in any way because it identically integrates to the added additional part integrates to zero with respect to O. However, so in some sense, doing this change does not change the operator essentially. So they are the same CFT operator. In the ADS Ringler wedge reconstruction, different ADS Ringler wedges correspond really to different operators in the CFT. There's no way to get around that. Yes?
So I thought in quantum gravity, we really don't expect to have local operators. Like, so in order to actually have like gauge invariant guys, we'll somehow have to attach these out to the boundaries.
Thank you.
Is it clear that when we do that you still only need part of the boundary to reconstruct it? It really doesn't matter what's going on the other end?
You can improve both of these statements by including dressings so that you have quasi-local operators instead of really local operators in the bulk. The idea is if you have gravitational interactions, so we have gravitational interaction, we have to at least have some gravitational dressing. If this operator is charged, we also have the standard gauge dressing. And this will appear in this formalism because this is an interaction. This is something that you have when you bring gauge interactions and so on. So this will appear at higher orders than we have worked so far. But one can improve this statement by including these dressings. And for example, let me just quickly mention what happens to the first commutator statement. We can choose a dressing so that it ends at a particular, we can frame the operator to a particular location on a boundary. Then we would derive the following surprising thing. Instead of saying that it commutes with all operators in the CFT, all local operators in the CFT, we would conclude that it commutes with all local operators not sitting exactly at this point, because I can simply repeat the argument whenever that operator is not sitting at that point. That's still a very surprising thing for quantum field theory to have. Any operator that does not commute, sorry, any operator in the CFT that commutes with all local operators except for those at a particular point must itself be a local operator at that point. So we conclude that this operator in the bulk is actually a local operator in the CFT, which is impossible. So because I'm running out of time, maybe I just describe in words and draw a picture for how to derive Einstein equations from entanglement instead of going through all the details. The picture is actually very simple and very nice. And I want to say that this is something which is in a different direction from what I have talked so far, but I think it's quite interesting. The idea is we have, so there are two ingredients. One is the first law of entanglement. The idea is that if we have a change of state from rho to rho plus delta rho, we have a small variation of the entropy equals the small variation of the expectation value of the modular Hamiltonian. So k is rho is defined as minus log rho. And this is true to linear order in delta rho under any arbitrary state deformation. This is a general truth. But the idea is that we can now realize, we can investigate what this implies in a holographic CFT, a CFT that has a gravitational dual. And it turns out by choosing an appropriate region, again, a spherical region in the CFT, one can write both sides of this equation in terms of gravitational quantities. On the left-hand side, we can use the Rutakyanagi formula to write it as the area of some minimal surface in Planck units. And we can consider a variation of that area in just a purely classical way. And the modular Hamiltonian, if we have a spherical region in a CFT, can also be written in terms of something times the stress tensor of the CFT. So it's an integral, it's an integral of a local operator in the CFT, which we can then relate to the metric behavior at infinity. So this part is what we should be familiar with. How to extract the local operator in the CFT? We look at the boundary. We look at the bulk field and look at how it asymptotes to the boundary. So that's simply one of the equations I had previously. Now the idea is consider a holographic CFT with this particular region. It has a density matrix in a vacuum state. Now do a state deformation by some delta rho, and we want that delta rho to correspond to a change of classical geometry in the bulk, okay? So delta rho corresponds, so on the CFT, we have delta rho's for some region, and in ADS, we have a change of metric. Now, a change of metric will change both the area of a minimal surface, and also it will have some asymptotic behavior where we can extract the stress tensor from. But the statement that these two must be equal for every infinitesimal state change is a huge constraint on what kind of change I have to allow in the theory. And in particular, this statement is true for arbitrary spherical regions centered anywhere in the CFT with arbitrary radius. And even more than that, we can use the boost symmetry to consider disks which are boosted with respect to some particular choice of t equals zero slice. So that will eventually allow us to derive not just a particular component of the Einstein equation is satisfied, but also all components, because by boosting the equation, we can get access to all the components of the equation. And there's a small limitation to what we can actually do here. The limitation being that because we are considering an infinitesimal state change, this is true to linear order in delta rho, we can only derive linearized Einstein equation from all of this. Now, an open question for all of you is to try to do it better so that we can actually derive the non-linearized Einstein equation or the full Einstein equation by doing something similar. With that, I'm out of time, so thank you all for your attention, and hope you can enjoy the lectures and can maybe think about these problems from now. Thank you. Yes?
So the change in entropy as a function of the change of the density matrix has a dimension, like it's a different dimension, it's the dimension of the Hilbert space for which the density matrix actually live on, according to Fermat's inequality. Your dimension seems to be unbounded in the theory?
Yes, but so there are divergences in the entropy itself, but the important thing is that if I do an infinitesimal change of state, the variation of the entropy in this case is in this particular case and if I really am changing a state in the CFT that has good behavior, then delta S, this variation should be finite. Yeah. So it is true that entropies and so on are infinite, but the way we usually think about this is always to introduce an ultraviolet cutoff in the theory. And then with that cutoff being finite, we can always think about the entropies and so on. And also this comes from the positivity. This can be written in terms of by expanding the relative entropy order by order in delta rho, and relative entropy is completely finite and well-defined in a quantum field theory in a continuum limit. In fact, it's the best defined quantities. Any other questions? Yes?
Yeah, so I guess what you told us here is valid in the linear order, two leading order in the Tolf limit, right?
Yeah, talking about the previous part, which involves bulk construction, or this part?
Also, yeah, I think about the bulk reconstruction.
Bulk reconstruction,
so
yes.
Anything known beyond leading order?
If you don't take the Tolf limit, yes, then you will have higher derivative corrections. So there are two ways to think about this. So Tolf limit means that at leading order we have Einstein-Hilbert gravity, and if we can perturbatively think about what is the order by order, what is a 1 over lambda correction, lambda being the Tolf coupling. There we simply include higher derivative theories in the bulk. For example, we can include r mu nu squared, where r mu nu is the Ricci scalar, or we can do something more complicated. So order by order, this can be done. And in fact, a few years ago, I wrote down a generalization of the Ruta-Kanagi formula for higher derivative theories. Now, you might also want to know what happens for finite lambda. If you don't want to do it perturbatively, then you have to really use string theory. String theory is a perturbative expansion in the string coupling, but it has all stringing corrections because the top coupling expansion corresponds to the alpha, what is known as the curvature expansion, and string theory deals with that in a complete way. So another open question is, can we improve this so that we can actually compute this for finite lambda in string theory? And that's another open question to think about. Yes?
Just piggybacking off of Dan's question, to do Rhythm reconstruction at higher order monographs, you said I need to push these gravitational hills.
Yes.
So I'm always guaranteed that I can comb these lines into appropriate boundary subregion.
Yeah, so the entire Wilson line, so it's probably intuitive that the entire Wilson line needs to be in the ADS Ringler wedge for that to happen.
What is the equivalence of these operators realized in different boundary regions on the code subspace? Tell me about the equivalences of the Wilson line, the gravitational drift.
The perspective I think one should take is if I choose this Wilson line versus another Wilson line, there are different bulk operators for sure. So there are actually different operators even on the code subspace. As opposed to fixing the framing of the Wilson line and then talk about different regions on the CFT, and that will correspond to different operators in the CFT but act identically in the code subspace. Here, I have different Wilson line operators. So they are really just operators that differ by order 1 over n, even acting in the code subspace.
So they'll just differ by a gauge choice? Your choice of dressing is a gauge choice.
It differs by a gauge choice in the following way. Gauge choice is like choosing a gravitational dressing. So it's just a convenient way of writing down how to do a particular framing. If we use this, then we choose a gauge where the gauge field in this direction is zero, so everything becomes simpler. But it doesn't change the fact that these two different framing corresponds to slightly different operators in a bulk.
Isn't this at odds with the code subspace is a good description?
But I think, if you're asking about the statement that these two operators are different operators in the bulk, they're just a natural consequence of doing quantum field theory in the bulk.
You said the action of the code subspace.
All the discussion about code subspace certainly assumes that this is a quantum error correcting code. But from the bulk, the point is that the level of our understanding of the bulk physics must allow us to write the same operator in many different ways because ADS-CFT guarantees this equation of motion to be true perturbatively. And therefore, I think at some level, quantum error correcting is unavoidable. It's a consequence. I think the more interesting question perhaps is, why does some CFT have this? Whereas a free boson probably will have something very different. Yes?
So under what condition does this smearing function equal to integration of this? Does it just work for some special case like thermostat?
You can do any state, so you can find this smearing function in any state that has a semi-classical dual. So you can certainly do it for a thermostate. You can do it for other states as well. You can insert operators by doing a deformation in the vacuum. So you can do a lot of things that you normally allow to do in ADS-CFT.
But it's just not obvious to me, why is this equal to the integration of
I'm sorry. You're talking about this line.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about a smearing function. This K is not a smearing function. It's the modular Hamiltonian. The fact that modular Hamiltonian can be written as an integral of a local operator in the CFT, that's very, very special. And that only works, the almost all examples that we know where that works can be connected or can be either directly or indirectly connected to the case where we have flat space and we choose a Ringler region And the modular Hamiltonian in the vacuum state of that theory is simply the boost in the Ringler wedge. So by conformal transformation, you can relate what happens there to what happens in the for a spherical region in the vacuum state of a CFT. So that's a class of examples where we know where the modular Hamiltonian is local in this sense. In general, if we change the state to anything else, or if we change the region from a perfectly spherical region to something more general, this won't be true. Yes?
To get the linear dynamics calibration, you did a small perturbation on the thermal state. Do you think to get a full nonlinear equation, you need to involve non-equilibrium treatment of the
CFT? In general, yes. One strategy for doing that is simply to choose a different state. And suppose we can linearizing around arbitrary state, that's pretty good. That will derive linearized Einstein equation for an arbitrary background, which, if you think about it, is actually deriving the non-linearized Einstein equation. The difficulty in that step, which is essentially the main difficulty here, is again that there is no simple relation that connects the, there is no simple way of writing k as a local operator and therefore connecting it to the bulk. So we know what the left-hand side means in the bulk, but the right-hand side is more complicated. But that shouldn't prevent you from trying.
I just want to mention that in that case, I think it's not guaranteed that your entropy is continuous as a function of the deformation. If you don't have a restriction on what is the quantum state, the fairness inequality is known to be having a dimensional dependence. Dimension means the size of the support of your density matrix. And I think there's no way to guarantee that there's a bound.
Maybe, this is something I want to know a little bit more. Here, although I do want to point out that here we are talking about a very restricted set of changes of state that corresponds to change of geometries in the bulk. So at least computationally, the result is that in those situations, the state change has a sufficiently mild behavior that this both sides of this equation end up being nicely behaved. But yeah, I'm happy to talk about that more.
Can you have some smooth versions of entropies, for example, reversing?
Well, I thought we were looking at the regular Poynovian entropy here.
Right,
and it's
kind of, you know, might be pathological.
Well, I don't think, say, for example, embezzlement is not so pathological, and it the problem bites again and again for those who do not restrict the initial state. Mm-hmm. As long as the state has large enough support, we are stuck with the discontinuity with the entropy.
Yes.
So you've got linearized Einstein equation instead of something else, like a higher derivative gravity. Is that because you only took the leading order area term in your Takinami and not the correct
one? One can improve all of this by including higher derivative corrections here.
Yeah.
And that would also derive linearized, not Einstein equation, but the appropriate equational motion for the metric in those theories. It has also been done. And it's probably true that I should also point out the reference for this part, which is these two papers. And the first is about Einstein gravity. The second is about higher derivative theory. Thank you.